Justice Bell, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Justice Bell unavoidably had to go down to Southern Nevada, so she's going to be on audio video, but obviously we'll be participating as well. And this is our last matter today. And do we, or you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes,
Your
Honor, I'd like to reserve.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
I'd like to reserve
3 minutes. 3? Okay. The light will come on and let you know when you're hitting 3 minutes. If you kind of blow by that, it's on you. We just kind of alert you, okay? And you can go ahead and start whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, Vicki Oldenburg, attorney for appellant Fabian Bernal. After a 7-day trial, Fabian, and if I'm going to refer to him as his first name since they both have the same last name, the co-defendant, Fabian, when he was 19, had gotten involved in an altercation at a liquor store in Reno, Nevada. Fabian was convicted of first-degree murder, attempted use with a deadly weapon, discharging a firearm into a vehicle, and he was sentenced to 32 years to life. What occurred was on March 13, 2021, the brothers stopped at a Reno liquor store. Fabian and his girlfriend went into the store and were just shopping around for some snacks. Shortly thereafter, a black Honda pulled into the parking lot, and in that Honda was Mr. Montoya and the victim who was killed, Mr. Rios. Mr. Montoya proceeded into the liquor store, and there was some evidence that he was staring at Fabian, as well as the girlfriend, kind of lurking behind possible areas in the store. Fabian and his girlfriend left the store, and Mr. Montoya made a purchase, quickly left the store without even getting his change, and followed Fabian and his girlfriend out back to Fabian's car. Fabian's brother, Yahir, was also in the car, as well as Fabian's younger brother, Angel. Fabian's brother was a known member of what's called the Southside Locos, or SSL gang, and Mr. Montoya was a known member of the Lost-Minded Tokers, the LMT gang. So shortly after everyone came out of the store, the brothers are seen getting back in their cars and coming out with guns, and that's all on the video. The video shows that Fabian did put his gun, tucked it in, so he wasn't extended with it, and then everything else happens off camera. Just seconds later, there's lots of gunshots. Mr. Montoya is seen running towards Peppermill Casino. Fabian and his brother are running back towards the car, and the Honda is slowly moving backwards. But again, nothing was on video with regards to what happened right after the two brothers left their car. One witness said there were three shooters. Another witness said there was only one person actually pointing their hand out to shoot. So there was some conflicting testimony. No guns, though, were ever found in this case. But there was evidence that the victim did have GSR on his hands. So we raised 4 issues implicating constitutional rights to fair trial. The first issue I'd like to start with is the district court's decision in denying the motion to sever. We believe that was done in an abuse of discretion. Despite concerns for efficiency and consistency, the district court has a duty at all stages of the trial to grant severance if there's an appearance of prejudice. So on August 23rd, 2022, the year before the trial, 7 months prior to the trial, the state had filed a motion to admit gang evidence, affiliation, and rivalry. The evidence, they argued, was relevant to establishing both Fabian and his brother's motive and intent, and that was clear throughout the motion. The next year, for whatever reason, the motion wasn't argued until March 7th, 2023, and the court issued an oral ruling to admit the gang evidence of affiliation and rivalry, and the court issued the written decision on March 10th. That same day, the defense filed a motion to sever the trials. On March 16th, the court had oral argument on that motion, and essentially, while not considering the merits of prejudice to Fabian, not addressing that, the court basically said severance has always been on the table, there's no good cause. There's a significant issue as to cooperation, availability of witnesses, considerable expense to the state, and inconvenience to the court, all which are fair considerations. But again, the court did not even look at the prejudicial aspect of this, of not severing the trials and going.
The sole issue behind the request for severance was the admission of the gang evidence?
Pardon me?
The sole issue behind the request for severance was the admission of the gang evidence?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it was the admission of gang evidence.
Do you concede that the gang evidence was, at least to Bernal Rodriguez, relevant to motive and intent?
I don't know that I would concede that, but it was used for that purpose.
Okay.
And then was there a Tavares instruction given relative to the admission of that evidence?
I don't believe that Tavares extension was adequate for several reasons.
There was also some testimony from Detective Bell, who testified that Fabian was not associated with the gang, right?
The testimony, I don't think, was that affirmative. What he basically said was, not to my knowledge, is he a member of a gang? But it wasn't affirmative. It wasn't, no, we don't have anything in our jackets or files or whatever you call them.
Let me ask you this, though. Well, hypothetically, let's say that the court finds that the admission of the gang affiliation evidence was relevant to motive and intent. My understanding of the charging document and the jury instructions was that the allegations included aiding and abetting and conspiracy. And under conspiracy theories, at least, the act of one conspirator is the act of all. If it was relevant to motive and intent, wouldn't it have been admissible against your client in a sole trial as to that being the reason behind the homicide if he was involved in a conspiracy?
If the charges, it might have been admissible, I think, but I think there still needed to be the whole analysis on the gang rivalry and affiliation testimony and whether it was more prejudicial or probative as
to. So your main concern is that you don't think the court examined it or analyzed it in the way that they should have before making the decision?
That's correct. The court didn't examine any of that, which has made it, you know, more difficult to try to present issues on appeal because there's nothing really to compare this to. It was a very unusual case, a lot of inconsistent testimony. So that is one concern. As far as the Tavares instruction, you know, that instruction, I believe, did not, it left it kind of open. It didn't say anything about individual guilt, like as you know in the Lyle case. Their instruction was very clear to the jury. You know, you have to consider the guilt of each co-defendant individually. Evidence used against one co-defendant cannot be used against the co-defendant in your deliberations. So that was a better instruction. The Tavares instruction here just really left it open. Basically, you're entitled to give this evidence whether what you deem appropriate. That Yahir Bernal Rodriguez possessed a specific intent with regards to the alleged crime. And at the end, however, you are specifically instructed to not consider this evidence for any other purpose whatsoever. But that, to me, just kind of left it open. What purpose? I mean, it could have been used for other purposes. I don't think it cured the severe prejudice that gang evidence brings into a trial. And I think Fabian was caught up in this gang trial because the theory of the state's case really essentially was this is a gang shooting. I mean, they brought in a gang expert. They brought in the evidence. There was some talk from some convoluted testimony from Angel, the younger brother, that, you know, we saw green, we saw the gang colors, there was mad dogging, maybe some gang gestures, things like that. But it really was a gang case when you read the whole transcript of the trial. And it's pretty hard to get around that. You know, this court has been very thoughtful in analyzing the prejudicial the prejudicial nature of gang evidence and has also been very cautious in allowing that evidence in. I think it would have been a very difficult trial, a different trial for Fabian if that evidence wasn't in.
Counsel, can I turn your attention just briefly to the exclusion of Mr. Montoya's testimony? I was interested in this issue because if there was a chance that Montoya could testify that the decedent actually had a gun and was pointing it at your client, that perhaps this was self-defense. And so I was concerned about that. But then I read the actual hearing transcript from Mr. Montoya, and he didn't really seem to remember anything, including being shot. I find that pretty remarkable as well. But, I mean, what are we to make of that? Because, you make a compelling argument that, if he were to testify, that it could go to your theory of self-defense.
And that really is where I see the prejudice lie with Fabian, as far as Mr. Montoya not even being able to testify as to just certain events, which he was able to without invoking the Fifth earlier in the out of the presence canvas that was done by the questioning that was done. I think it did have an effect on Fabian's rights to confront, especially when this gang evidence kind of colored the whole trial. And I don't think it really gave him the opportunity to develop his self-defense theory. I mean, again, we have to remember there wasn't a lot of evidence in this case. There was some damaging evidence when Fabian got in his car and pulled the gun out, and it looked like he loaded it. I don't think anyone disagreed with that. But then off camera, there's nothing. We don't know who shot who. We don't know if this was self-defense or if it was heat of the moment because, Fabian felt provoked and concerned. Mr. Montoya is violent. We just don't know any of that. And the fact that, Mr. Montoya couldn't even get up and testify who was there, there probably would have been a lot of objections and probably a lot of motions if he was able to testify as to the limited questions. But
to Justice Lee's point, let's assume that you're right and that there should be some type of carve-out when somebody invokes that we can call them and ask them certain questions, separate from what they've invoked their Fifth Amendment rights on. What was there about what he was providing in testimony that would have been informative on any of the things you just spoke of?
Well, I think, to the extent there might have been an identity issue with him running through the casino with what appeared, and one officer did testify, or he uttered as he was watching the video, that, is that a gun? And then later the testimony was sort of tempered. Well, it might have been a cell phone. We really don't know what it was.
But, I mean, the point is he seemed to answer most everything with I don't recall.
He did answer I don't recall, but, so did Angel. I mean, it's kind of a we want it and we don't want it. Angel got up there and testified with immunity. I don't recall, I don't recall, I don't recall. But then the detective who had talked to him was able to get up and impeach his testimony. We didn't have that with Mr. Montoya. He did talk to the police. He did say that he had been shot, and then he said, I didn't was shot, but then I went to the hospital with my mother, and then I didn't have a gun. He did say a lot of statements to the police that didn't really ever come into the trial, and I think there would have been a better opportunity for him to at least develop a manslaughter case or a self-defense case. Looks like I have 2 minutes left. Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Naughton.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Kevin Naughton. I represent the Washoe County District Attorney's Office in this appeal. This case is really about Adrian Rios being shot to death because Fabian Bernal felt disrespected. That was the theme of the state's closing argument in this case, and I think it's really the crux of the state's response to all of the issues raised in the opening brief on this appeal. The first two issues raised in the opening brief, in my analysis, go together, and so I'd like to start by addressing those. The first is the introduction of gang evidence. As I think the court's questions have sort of alluded to today, the district court was very clear that gang evidence was only admitted against the co-defendant, Fabian's brother, Yahir, who was a documented member of the Southside Locos, and that was accompanied by appropriate limiting instructions. Immediately before Detective Ball, the only gang expert, the only gang testimony that was presented in this case, immediately before he testified, the court provided two instructions, instructing the jury that they were only to consider it for the limited purpose of determining whether Yahir had the appropriate motive and intent for participating in this crime, and it was not to be considered for any other purpose whatsoever. Those same instructions were repeated in the final charge to the jury, both as read and written by the district court. And those were in jury instructions number 36 and 37. Pursuant to this court's prior jurisprudence in Butler, that was an appropriate way of handling the prejudicial impact of gang testimony. And in this case, it was specifically limited only to Yahir. Although it's not binding on this case, or excuse me, on this court, I would point out that the Court of Appeals, in reviewing Yahir's appeal on this same issue this summer, found that that gang evidence was appropriately admitted with those limiting instructions. And so to the extent that it might be persuasive in any way, I would reference the Court of Appeals ruling in that particular matter as well.
What would you propose in terms of whether there's a test or something that we should adopt when a criminal defendant is making an allegation of an improper evidentiary decision limited to a co-defendant, but they're tried together?
Your Honor, I think that falls under the severance analysis in all likelihood. When we start talking about the strength of the evidence against one defendant versus against another, I think that starts to get into this idea of spillover prejudice. And so I would submit that the analysis under those cases, Marshall, Chartier, Lyle, I think that's all persuasive and controlling authority in that particular realm.
But it can't just, I don't think the test can just be limited to severance, right? Because this can occur in the middle of a trial. You got co-defendants on trial and the court makes an evidentiary ruling regarding a witness's testimony. And later on, a defendant gets convicted and saying that evidentiary ruling affected me. And the argument is, well, do you have standing to issue that because or challenge that because it only applied to the co-defendant, but you're sitting there at trial. So obviously, I mean, at the very least, it would seem like our test should be if you can show prejudice based on that ruling in some fashion, then obviously you can challenge it.
And I think that already exists under the severance case law, Your Honor.
Okay.
The court is on notice. It has an obligation throughout trial to keep an eye out for that prejudice. And if prejudice arises at any point in trial, that severance decision needs to be reexamined and potentially the result changed at that point in time. And so I do think that does fall under the severance analysis.
Okay.
Additionally, I would point to the Tavares case and those lines of cases regarding the limiting instructions when we're talking about co-defendants. I believe what the district court did in this case appropriately limited the prejudice to Fabian by identifying Yahir Bernal by name in that instruction and directly instructing the jury that that evidence was not to be considered for any other purpose whatsoever. Moving on to the severance question, the standard on appeal is that the appellant has to carry the heavy burden of showing that the district court abused its discretion regarding severance. There were several issues here related to Fabian's motion to sever. First, it was untimely under the NRS, the Nevada Rules of Criminal Procedure, or the district court's briefing order, any one of which is appropriate authority for setting that timeline. Under the Rules of Criminal Procedure and the Nevada revised statutes, that motion is required to be filed in writing at least 15 days before trial. This was filed March 10th before a March 20th trial. 5 judicial days, 10 calendar days, late under either calculation. The untimeliness can be excused if it's accompanied by a showing of good cause in the form of a declaration or an affidavit. That wasn't present in this case either. And in fact, the motion made no efforts to address the untimeliness in the content of the motion either. However, the district court, I think in an abundance of caution and in its own words, said, I don't want to try this case twice, proceeded to review the merits of the motion to sever. And so that's where we're at on this appeal, is reviewing the merits. And Marshall is one of the Nevada cases that I think sets out the standard very clearly, very well, regarding that motion to sever. And it requires more than just a showing that acquittal would be more likely. And it holds that misjoinder only warrants reversal if there is a substantial and injurious effect on the verdict. And I would submit there is no substantial or injurious effect on the verdict in this case from the admission of gang evidence only as to Yahir Bernal's motive and intent. The evidence presented against Fabian in this case very clearly showed that he had his own motivations. He had his own actions that he undertook in this case to promote this disagreement, this fight, and ultimately raise it to a fatal challenge between himself and Martin Montoya. As Ms. Oldenburg pointed out, there is some sort of altercation, some sort of interaction inside of town liquor that then carries out to the parking lot. Exhibit 227, which was admitted at trial and has been transmitted to this court, is exterior surveillance video from town liquor. And it picks up when Fabian is going back to his car and Martin Montoya comes back out. The two of them engage in this staring contest. Fabian gets back into his car, at which point, according to Angel, he says, hey, that guy was mad-dogging me, showing me disrespect. He says that, as a result, he's going to go over there, tell that guy what's up, and let's get down, meaning let's start a fight. Fabian is seen exiting the vehicle even before his brother is here, manipulating a gun, sliding the rack, and then proceeding after Martin Montoya on that video. There's no indication that Fabian was motivated in any way based upon Yahir's membership or rivalry in a gang that was rivals with Martin Montoya's LMT gang. Fabian Bernal was disrespected, he felt disrespected, and he took matters into his own hands by manipulating his gun and chasing Martin Montoya over to his car.
Do you think it was error to exclude Mr. Montoya's testimony, given that he's the only surviving victim of this alleged crime? Well, I guess it's not alleged anymore. Do you think that that was error to exclude his testimony, and that you guys could have maybe asked questions around the Fifth Amendment that wouldn't invoke that clause?
No, Your Honor. And that's because Martin Montoya did have a valid reason for invoking his Fifth Amendment right. And Palmer speaks to the conflict between a defendant's Sixth Amendment right to confront and compel testimony versus a witness or victim's Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. And Palmer effectively holds that a valid assertion of a Fifth Amendment right overrides that Sixth Amendment right of a criminal defendant. In this case, Martin Montoya did answer some questions before he started invoking his Fifth Amendment right, but they essentially amounted to, I don't remember that night because I was very intoxicated. That's in no way helpful to the self-defense case in this scenario. It amounts to nothing more than I can't remember what I might have done or said on that night. In opposition to Lyle, there's no indication, there was no offer of proof made as to what impeachment could have occurred of Mr. Montoya's statements, even if he had taken the stand and said, I don't remember that night because I was too drunk. So we don't know what that testimony might have provided. We don't know how it might have influenced the defense in this case. And then in addition to that, I would submit that there's no evidence in this record that the defense sought to compel Mr. Montoya's testimony in this case. When provided the opportunity to cross-examine, both defendants declined. And so the only questions that were posited to Mr. Montoya came from the state. Even if this court were to attribute those questions, those limited questions from the state to statements that might have been adduced on behalf of the defendants, again, it doesn't amount to anything that would have assisted in the defense. It doesn't assist in any way with the self-defense. And it only serves to underline Mr. Montoya's valid assertion of his Fifth Amendment rights here. When the state got to questions of what happened on March 13th, regarding what you were doing beforehand, what motions you may have made with your hands, whether anybody had a gun, that's when Mr. Montoya started invoking his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. Had he been forced to answer questions, as the district court identified and as the state would submit to this court on appeal, he could have incriminated himself for unlawful possession of a firearm by a minor, assault with a deadly weapon, felony murder, and ultimately even first-degree murder under a challenge to fight theory, particularly if the defendant's self-defense theory is accepted in this case. The opening brief discusses that perhaps some limited questions, including whether Mr. Rios had a gun, could have been answered. Again, in closing argument, Fabian Bernal's attorney argued that it was possible, based upon the way that Adrian Rios' hands were positioned in his lap, that maybe he was holding something heavy, like a firearm. The way his fingers were found curled by the medical examiner and by police when they arrived, maybe he was holding a firearm. And there was a suggestion that maybe Martin Montoya had grabbed Adrian Rios' firearm before he fled the Honda over to the Peppermill Casino across the street. Again, answering that question, even though not necessarily directly implicating Martin Montoya in possession of a firearm, could potentially incriminate Martin Montoya for destroying or concealing evidence under NRS 199.220. And so for those reasons, we would submit that the district court's decision in this case was appropriate, finding that Martin Montoya did have a valid reason to assert his Fifth Amendment right, and that the defendants could not compel Mr. Montoya to incriminate himself for their benefit on the stand in front of this jury.
How was the photo of Mr. Bernal with the gun, what was that relevant to? Like, what did that prove in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. As Ms. Oldenburg pointed out, none of the firearms were located after the shooting in this case. And so there was a question, and in fact, part of the closing arguments in this case was that the state hadn't necessarily proven the charges beyond a reasonable doubt, and that there were numerous instances of a failing of the evidence. In this case, the state presented that photograph to show that Fabian Montoya had access to a semi-automatic firearm before the shooting, that it was located in his bedroom, and that he had access to it just in the weeks leading up to the shooting. The way that he...
But there's nothing to tie that particular firearm to this particular offense.
That's correct, Your Honor. That gun was never recovered.
So I guess I'm struggling to see how that... I mean, there's video of him with a gun, right?
It's not entirely clear if it's a gun on the video. The state's argument is that it was a gun. It's difficult to tell. The state's argument was that he appeared to be manipulating in front of his waist an item, and that it appeared that he racked a slide, as would be consistent with a semi-automatic firearm, which is the same type of firearm that was seen in that photograph that was presented to the jury.
Were there shell casings?
There were numerous shell casings discovered on the scene. There were, I believe, 16 in total. One of those was related to an earlier shooting that appeared to have slipped through when that evidence was collected. 15 were identified as coming from two guns, which were argued to be fired in this particular case, 8 from one and 7 from another. Neither of those guns were recovered. Part of the state's argument was that was consciousness of guilt, in addition to disposing of the clothing that was seen on the surveillance video, as well as in those photographs that were depicted of Fabian Bernal in his bedroom before the shooting.
So those were the same clothes that were depicted on the video?
They appear to be, Your Honor. And Fabian Bernal appears to be wearing them in a similar way. He's not wearing the shoes in that video. They are on the side of his bed in the background. But in one of the photographs, he is wearing what appears to be the same jacket or sweatshirt, and he even has it flipped open on the right side in a very similar way to how he wore it on the night of the shooting. If I could just touch briefly on the overwhelming evidence in this case that was submitted. I believe this goes to both the photographs and the severance analysis, again, on whether or not there was a substantial and injurious effect on this verdict. The state would direct this court to Exhibit 227, that surveillance video from Town Liquor, which we've discussed, as well as Exhibit 232, which contained the interview clips of Angel Bernal's interview with Detective Jenkins. And we would submit that it really shows that Fabian Bernal is the one pushing this action. He's not merely following along with his brother. It's Fabian Bernal who has this dispute with Martin Montoya, who escalates it to a deadly confrontation, who pursues Martin Montoya over to the vehicle in which he and his brother ultimately wind up shooting and killing Adrian Rios. You see that he's the one who says to Angel when they get back in the car, "That guy was mad-dogging us. I'm going to go over there and tell him what's up. Let's get down." He tells Angel... Angel tells the detectives that when Fabian pulled out his gun, his strap, the other guys, meaning Martin Montoya and Adrian Rios, say, "Let's go, let's go, let's go," and get in their car to try to avoid the situation. I think that undercuts the self-defense theory. It shows that these two are not in any position to be engaging in this confrontation. In fact, they're trying to avoid it themselves when Fabian Bernal and his brother approach with firearms. Angel told Detective Jenkins in clip M on Exhibit 232 that we tried to stop them, but we couldn't, again showing that Fabian Bernal is the one who's driving this action towards the victims. And he said that when you F with Fabian and he pulls his gun out, it's crossed the line, you've crossed the line. Fabian Bernal was correctly convicted based on the evidence that was admitted against him, and his conviction should be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
All right, Ms. Holdenberg.
I'd like to briefly touch on the spillover effect, because we know that's really a critical analysis in this severance. It's likely the jury had an unfavorable impression of Fabian. Fabian's brother's a gang member. Gangs are families. You know, it's very likely that they put two and two together and assume that Fabian was a gang member, even though there was this curative instruction, which I don't believe was adequate, and the non-affirmative answer of Detective Ball. As far as the gun evidence, you know, this evidence comes in quite frequently, but there was no real analysis of this in the judge's decision. And you know, what's important here is no witness ever saw Fabian with this gun. before or after the shooting. There was no identity. You know, there's a lot of forensic testimony, but it really came up to nothing. They couldn't identify what bullets would go with what gun, whether the shooting was inside or outside of the car, how many shooters there were. I think there was identity of two guns. You know, we don't have any of that evidence where this would normally come in, where you found the gun, you know, the defendant, you know, looked like he was pointing the gun in a YouTube video or something earlier. It could have been his brother's gun. It could have been his father's gun. So I think that was more prejudicial than prejudice as to Mr. Fabian Bernal. As far as the timeliness of the motion, admittedly it was late, but in the omnibus motion to sever, the attorney did state that he was bringing his declaration through this motion and that it essentially was not ripe until the judge, until the district court decided that the gang evidence was going to come in as to Yahir.
Well, on that issue, I learned the hard way as a district court judge that if you address the motion on its merits, you've pretty much, you know, conceded the timeliness issue at the as the judge in the case. So I'm not holding that part of it against you.
Okay. She did, may I comment?
Yes.
She did address it on the merits, but really not. She just said it doesn't merit a finding to justify severance. To her, she was very focused on administrative efficiency. Thank you very much, and I'm requesting the court reverse the conviction and order Fabian a new trial.
Thank you.